Welcome to Dispatch in Depth, where we give you the stories behind the science of emergency dispatch. This is the official research podcast of the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch, the world's leading authority in dispatch science. I'm your host, Isabel Gardette, Director of Academics for the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch. In each episode, we'll be bringing you stories of the fascinating people who do research in this area. We'll give you their backstory, including how they got there, what they're working on, and what drew them to the research. These are people who represent the cutting edge in dispatch research, and I hope you'll join us to hear more about them. Welcome to Dispatch in Depth. Today's guest is a consultant for Circadian, which provides insights and solutions for 24/7 workplaces, those that work in shifts and operate around the clock. Recent research has suggested that shift work, and especially exposure to certain kinds of light during night shifts, can have serious adverse health effects. And my guest has been asked by companies around the world to help them understand what those effects are and how to manage them. Today, he's here to talk with us about shift work, blue light, and shift worker well-being. Welcome, Andrew Moore-Ead.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So before we get into blue light, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? What's your background and how did you get into the role that you're in now?
Sure. So I've always been interested in sleep. In large part, my father was a professor at Harvard Medical School who was researching sleep and circadian rhythm. And I did research on adolescent sleep in high school and in college. Then took a little detour after college and worked in the biotech industry, but then came and started working for Circadian about 14 years ago. And it's a really nice blend of kind of research and consulting and really kind of getting to help people, which is something that was always important to me, and come up with solutions to really try to optimize the health and the safety and the productivity of people working in our 24/7 society. And I know a lot of people are surprised, but about 20% of the industrialized workforce, about 20% of Americans are working in shift work environments. And
really?
I imagine it's something your listeners know very well, that 24/7 world that they're having to respond to and help all the time and around the clock.
Yeah. So I want to start with something that just blew me away when I first heard you talk about it, which is the seriousness of the health effects that shift work can have on people. So let's just start out. What are those health effects and what research has been done to look at those?
Sure. So we've known there have always been associations with shift work and various health aspects, particularly with sleep, some metabolic and kind of diet issues as well. But what was sort of a tipping point for us and a lot of our clients was in 2007 when the World Health Organization came out and they classified shift work as a class 2A carcinogen, as something that is probably carcinogenic, as something that could potentially cause cancer. And they came to that finding based on sort of two different types of research. One were population-based studies where they were looking at large groups of shift workers from all variety of sort of resources and studies going on around the world. And they were able to isolate that female shift workers were having 50 to 60% higher rates of breast cancer than the general population.
Wow.
I know the numbers are staggering. It's pretty alarming. And I mean, on a personal, my wife's a nurse, so this sort of hit home for me because she's worked plenty of night shifts herself. And so it's kind of alarming. I know a lot of us have family members and friends and or ourselves who work shift work. And then in addition to that, there was research that was showing that one thing we know that happens is that light exposure at night can suppress melatonin and disrupt our circadian rhythms. And I'm sure for many people, they think, all right, melatonin is something you go to your local CVS or Walgreens or pharmacy to use as a sleep aid. But in fact, melatonin, they're learning, plays a key role not only in helping entrain our circadian rhythms, but also plays a key role with our immune system in keeping us healthy. And what new research has also shown is that melatonin plays a role in being an anti-tumor property. In other words, what they've seen is they've actually taken human breast tumor cells, injected them into mice, and then they put two different types of blood into these tumor cells. One is from women who've been sleeping at night, who've been producing lots of melatonin, and what they found is those tumor cells shrank. Then they went out and they collected blood from women who've been working night shifts, particularly, I believe a lot of it was nurses and doctors. They took their blood, which was low in melatonin and being exposed to light at night. They injected that blood into the tumor cells, and instead of shrinking, they found these tumor cells were growing 2 to 3 times in size. And so now all of a sudden they said, oh my goodness, we're seeing this 50 to 60% greater risk of breast cancer among shift workers, combined with this direct research showing that when you lower melatonin levels in the blood, that tumor cells are actually growing. And they sort of saw this causal effect occurring. So as you can imagine, if you, whether you're a shift worker, managing a shift worker, a company that employs shift workers, they came to, our clients came to us and said, all right, what is going on? Is this true? Is this something we should be concerned about? And kind of most importantly, what should we be doing in our 24/7 operations to kind of minimize this risk? And so that's kind of how our journey into light started after that World Health Organization announcement.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that we had talked about was the idea that there are certain kinds of light or certain wavelengths of light that in particular have an mm-hmm. effect on people. And I was fascinated to hear that there's like a long biological history for why those particular wavelengths matter. Could you talk us through that a little bit?
Sure, yeah, I'd be happy to. It's really fascinating. So we've known for decades that light plays a key role in syncing our biological clock. I mean, for example, if you were to get on an airplane and fly to Asia or fly to Europe, one of the fastest ways to shift your biological clock into that new environment is to get lots of light exposure, lots of sunlight exposure. But we always thought all light was created equal. But then we started to have our first clues that maybe that wasn't the case. And that really came from populations of people that were blind. They've discovered that they noticed that some people that are blind have what we call very normal circadian rhythm functions. They're awake during the day, they're sleeping during the night. And there are other people that have a circadian rhythm disorder. They're sleeping at odd times, their biological clock rhythms aren't following these predictable 24-hour cycles. And it sort of led to this question, you know, why is it impacting some blind people and not the others? And the question was occurred, well, maybe there are light-sensitive cells in our eyes that have nothing to do with vision. Maybe they bypass the rods and cones and visual pathways and instead have their own direct pathway to our biological clock. So sure enough, in the early 2000s, they discovered these cells, the melanopsin cells, and they found that when these cells detect light, it just sends it directly to the biological clock. And sure enough, what they found with the people that are blind is some people have a complete severance. It's completely severed, these connections, these pathways. Mm-hmm. Whereas other people are blind, while the visual system isn't working, the pathway to their biological clock is still working with these light-sensitive cells. So the follow-up experiment was saying, all right, now that we've identified these cells, let's look at individual wavelengths of light, or picture a rainbow of all the different colors of light. Let's start going through the rainbow and shining these monochromatic, single wavelength lights at these cells and basically see what they respond to. You know, I'd almost imagine someone with a metal detector on the beach kind of saying, all right, what are these cells going to start, you know, resonating to? Mm. So sure enough, they start going through the wavelengths, nothing in the low and the red wavelengths, nothing. They get to blue light, and all of a sudden, these cells start to just respond. And they find that these cells are 25 times more responsive to blue light than any other wavelength of light. So what's fascinating is, and what was discovered, is that we have these melanopsin cells in our eyes. And if you picture, if you're looking straight ahead, these cells are actually pointed upwards towards the sky, and all they're doing is they are looking for blue light. And if they see blue light, it sends a message directly to our biological clock to say, it's daytime, and you should be in daytime mode. And for most of human history, our ancestors were outside hunting, gathering, farming in very bright environments, getting very strong blue light and signals during the day. And then once the sun set, it was darkness. And really the only artificial light available was fire. And fire has very little blue light in it. Now, the question, why blue light? It seems kind of arbitrary. Why not green light? Why not red light? Why blue light? Our best guess comes from the open ocean. When you shine sunlight on the ocean, everything starts to get filtered and filtered, and it gets darker and darker the deeper you go into the ocean. And what they noticed is that everything gets filtered to about 200 meters deep, and at the very tip point, at 200 meters underwater, the only light that is visible is blue light, the same blue light that our eye receptors are looking for their cue for the biological clock. And what they've discovered is that some of the oldest organisms on Earth are living in the ocean, 200 meters underwater. They're single-cell organisms, and they actually have the same melanopsin cells that we have in our eyes. And they respond to blue light, they have biological clocks, and they even secrete melatonin. And what we're learning is that this is not just something that humans have, not just something that these single-cell organisms in the ocean have, but we're seeing throughout the animal kingdom that we have this blue light sensitivity, that animals use it, life forms on use it, use blue light as a trigger for setting daytime from nighttime.
Yeah, I love that story. Just the idea that we have these ancient cells in our eyes looking up to the sky for blue light to tell us how to maintain our biological rhythms. That's just, it just blows me away, that story.
It is incredible too. And I actually have in my office a picture that I printed of this kind of study. I think it's from one of the water, some organization, but actually shows the image of water getting filtered out into the ocean. And that very tippy point, it's almost picture a mountain upside down, that very pinpoint there is exactly the same blue sensitivity that we have. And it just goes to show you there's certain things that get picked up in our DNA that just get translated among species over and over again. So it's just it's an incredible piece of kind of discovery and research there.
Well, so I just want to move over. Oh, did you want to add something else?
I was going to say sort of to the what we discovered is in terms of the impact blue light has on night and kind of disrupting our 24-hour cycles. And I don't know if you were going to ask a question regarding that, but that's something I might want to just...
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Okay. So we have these light-sensitive cells in our eyes that are detecting blue light and using it to cue our circadian rhythm. And as I mentioned, our ancestors had very strong light signals, very bright, lots of blue light during the day, very dark, very little blue light at nighttime. Now you kind of picture modern day society and say, all right, is that what we're experiencing right now? And unfortunately, it's kind of a sad statistic. About 90% of our time, of North Americans' time, is spent indoors. We're not getting outside very often, which is kind of a sad thing. And we're often in dimly lit environments. So we're kind of depriving ourselves of this blue light signal during the daytime. And then at nighttime, instead of being in darkness and in candlelight and campfire, we're turning on artificial light sources. We're staring at screens and tablets and monitors. And we're kind of basically throwing this signal, this very sturdy signal that our ancestors and our design specs were organized to have, into a bit of a chaos here. And so that has serious implications for our well-being and health. And I think an analogy I've heard that I think is very interesting is our biological clock is using blue light to signal itself. And the biological clock is basically, it's the conductor of your body's orchestra. So when everything is humming along smoothly, it's directing hundreds of different biological rhythms, and they're all playing in harmony to a beautiful music. Everything's keeping you healthy and productive and vigilant and feeling good. But when you start to disturb that steady biological rhythm by exposing yourself to blue light at night, it starts to throw that music off balance. All of a sudden, you've got two different instruments that are not supposed to be playing at the same time or going. And what a way we experience this is with kind of jet lag. A lot of people might have the feeling if they've got off an airplane after taking an overnight flight, or maybe you've worked a night shift and you get off, in the morning time, and you feel like, oh, I feel like it's nighttime, I feel like it's time to go to bed, and you go outside and the sun's rising and it's bright and you feel don't feel connected with your environment. That's often what we call a classic sign of circadian disruption. And the research on circadian disruption is really booming over the last 5 to 10 years and showing that it is connected to all sorts of health and well-being and diseases. We're seeing, of course, with sleep. That's one that the public is probably most aware of, that is leading to sort of insufficient sleep, insomnia, fragmented sleep. We're seeing some of the largest companies in the world, like Apple and Amazon, coming up with, you know, night shift mode and blue shade mode for their electronic devices. And what we're also seeing is that by disrupting our circadian rhythms, it's impacting things like increasing the risk for certain hormonal types of cancer. I mentioned breast cancer and prostate cancer. We're also seeing it impact mood disorders, depression, mania, bipolar, for example, a variety of other conditions. So it definitely has huge repercussions for human health and well-being for just about all of humanity, but particularly for people that are sort of supporting our 24/7 world, the shift workers out there, it has huge implications for them and really and how we should be providing light sources for the 24/7 world that we live in.
Yeah, so I actually wanted to talk a little bit about the operational side of this. So your company started to ask not only what the effects of blue light were, but how to improve the lights that shift workers are using. And you started to develop new LED lights, I think, with low levels of blue in them. Could you tell us what happened when you started working on the prototypes for those?
Sure. So we kind of started off even a little bit before then with kind of a simple question, or what we thought was a simple question is, you know, what lights should our clients be using? So if you're working in a 24/7 emergency dispatch center, or if you're working in an oil refinery or an hospital, what lights should they be using? So we actually got a grant from the National Institute of Health to study this question. And so we basically pulled common light sources, you know, almost took a trip to Home Depot, if you will, and pulled, you know, LEDs and fluorescents, really with the idea of saying, all right, is there something that we would recommend our clients use? And what we discovered is that really all the lights on the market just had too much blue light in them. So we had our study participants come in. They worked simulated night shifts and day shifts for 12 hours. We put them under different lights. We took blood samples, saliva samples, alertness reactions, tests, just to see how light impacts their well-being and physiology and performance. And basically, at the end of the day, we learned two really critical things. One is that there wasn't a light source on the market that we would felt comfortable recommending our clients use. So unfortunately, it wasn't as simple as saying, all right, if you want to, in your night shift environment, you should go out and buy X light that meets these specifications. So that was number one. Number two is we said, all right, really what we're seeing now is that the blue light that is most impactful on our biology and on our circadian rhythms seems to be between 440 to 490 nanometers. And ideally what we need, based on looking at all the literature and research out there, is we need to create a light source that provides ideally less than 2% blue power in that blue light range. So we kind of took a jump and said, all right, let's try spinning off a new company and hire some engineers and then very smart people in the lighting industry and see if we could develop a light source that provides lots of blue light during the day, but then provides as little blue light as possible at night. And so one of our first sort of stabs at this, we said, all right, this isn't that difficult. We'll just get rid of all the blue. And so what we learned very quickly, and some of the lighting people that we, engineers we hired kind of laughed at, is when you get rid of all the blue light, it turns the light neon yellow. Mm. So picture a tennis ball, you know, that kind of bright yellow color. That's the effect it creates when you get all the blue out. And so when we kind of had people under a bright yellow environment, people felt very uneasy, uncomfortable. Subjects were saying, all right, what exactly are you testing again? You know, is there an alarm going off? Should we be in the building right now? So that was one thing. And we also saw is that it was impacting the color rendering of things in the environment, meaning that colors didn't appear true. So an example of that would be, imagine you are in an emergency room. So that's never a place you want to be, but imagine you're in an emergency room and the doctor's looking at you. If you're under neon yellow light, it's going to be very hard to look at your skin tone, to see blood, to see all sorts of things. And just like if you're often in a other sort of 24/7 environment, yellow is often a color signified warning or, you know, caution. Mm-hmm. And so it can also impact that color as well on a computer screen or in the environment. So we kind of went back to the drawing board and said, all right, take two. Let's try to get as little blue light as possible, but also try to make sure that it has a good color rendering, that colors in the environment appear true. Basically, after a lot of trial and error, what we were able to do is spectrally engineer what we call a night-safe LED, which gets rid of as much blue light as possible, but also has a good color rendering, so colors in the environment appear true. And the response from the lighting industry was very kind of interesting. A lot of people said, you know, who's this small company that says they've done this? We don't even think this is possible. So we actually took our LED to the UL, the Underwriters Laboratory, which is an independent third-party resource that basically tests electronics from all over the world and verifies that they're safe. So they took our LEDs, we sent them samples, and they tested it, and sure enough, they were able to confirm that our LED emits less than 2% blue light at night. And as a comparison, the standard LEDs on the market are typically 15, 20, 25%. So that was a huge, being able to greatly lower the level of blue light in the environment.
And then you took those and you tested them, right? You found that they actually had an interesting effect on the people who were using them.
That's right. Then we sort of brought subjects back to our lab, and we said, all right, let's do an experiment where we really dose people with blue light 24/7 and see what the physiological response is. So when I say dose people with blue light, what we did is we took a what we call a day LED, which is almost a traditional blue-rich LED. Then we took our night LED, and then we added a third component, which was a control system. It's basically an astronomical clock where we said, all right, we know where sunrise and sunset is, and let's try providing people with lots of blue-rich light during the day. And in fact, let's try boosting the blue light levels even higher in the morning. There's a lot of research showing that one of the best ways to entrain your circadian rhythm, one of the best ways to ensure you get good sleep at night is to get lots of blue light exposure in the morning. They often recommend going outside for a walk in the morning. You know, getting natural sunlight is a great way to kind of reset and re-energize your biological clock. So we said, all right, let's boost the blue light in the morning, then we'll bring it down, and then around 2 p.m., that post-lunch dip that we all have, let's try boosting the blue light levels again then. And there's a lot of research showing that when you boost blue light in that time of day, it actually has an energizing effect. And then we said, and then when the sun sets, let's start to turn off the day LED and turn the night LED on and see what happens. So what we found is that when we put people under the blue rich light at night, that it was actually putting people in a pre-diabetic state, meaning that if you've ever been to the doctors and they have you drink the sugary drink, and they take a urine sample and look at your glucose and sugar levels, we found that after two night shifts being under blue-rich light, that people were going into a pre-diabetic state. We found that not to be the case with our light. One thing we also saw is that with blue light at night, that people tend to get hungrier, which is really an interesting phenomenon. But we see people get hungrier, and they want to snack more, and they want to eat more. And then combined with this, the body's ability not to produce insulin and respond to these increases in sugar in our system, it kind of creates this real issue of increasing the risk of diabetes and other metabolic disorders. And we found that with our light, we didn't have this effect, that people weren't having the same type of food cravings at night. And when we tested their blood sugar in the morning, they weren't going into that pre-diabetic condition. One thing that we also found that was really exciting is that where blue-rich light at night was suppressing melatonin, and that's sort of the universal finding we're seeing from research around the world, with this blue depleted light, people were still secreting melatonin as if they were asleep in a dark bedroom, which was sort of fascinating to see that we had people under very bright light, about 50-foot candles, which is just over 500 lux, so a bright, well-lit room. They were working, doing simulated shifts, and their bodies were still secreting melatonin. And one thing we were concerned about when we set up the experiment is we said, all right, if people are secreting melatonin at night, are they going to get tired and drowsy and be less able to do their job well? And what we found is that wasn't the case, that when they were in a light, well-lit environment, that they were still alert, they were still responsive. We tested reaction time tests, and we saw that it wasn't compromised at all. In fact, their reaction times were just as good as when they were in a blue-rich environment. And when you kind of look out to the animal world, what's really interesting is that a lot of nocturnal animals, so raccoons, lions, they all secrete melatonin at night when they're most active. So this idea that melatonin is in and of itself a soporific, something that puts you to sleep, is actually not quite accurate. When you put pharmacological levels of melatonin into your system, so if you go out to your local pharmacy and you take a melatonin supplement, you're putting significantly higher levels of melatonin into your system than your body naturally produces. We're talking 10, 20-fold time the amount your body naturally produces. When you do that and kind of put lots of melatonin in your system, then it can have a sleep-inducing effect. It especially seems to be good at helping people fall asleep. But when you just are able to achieve and restore normal levels of melatonin, it doesn't seem to have this sort of fatigue-inducing effect that we see with a melatonin supplement.
It's sort of odd, actually, to think that people are up in the middle of the night in a brightly lit room, producing melatonin as if they're asleep.
It is fascinating. And it kind of all goes back to that blue signal. You know, we're kind of playing around and saying, all right, if we avoid that receptor, what happens? And it almost tricks, you know, more or less it's tricking the body's physiology into staying into a 24-hour cycle. And there's been a kind of a debate among shift workers for a long time saying, all right, is it better when you work a night shift to try to shift your biological clock 12 hours ahead? So you are, when you're working that night, even though you might be in Chicago, your body thinks it's in Japan. And what we're seeing is that, A, that is very hard to do. Even if you work a fixed night shift on off days, people tend to revert back to daytime living. And typically, the most you can shift someone with bright light at nighttime is just an hour or two. You can't really shift the biological clock too far ahead in one night, so it doesn't really seem to be a practical solution there. And then we're seeing all this research showing when you start to play around and you're shifting people's circadian rhythms night after night, it can really increase the risk of all these type of negative health consequences. So we think the solution is to try to entrain circadian rhythms and prevent circadian disruption without impacting our society and people's ability to do their jobs safely and effectively at nighttime.
Yeah, that's a great finding. And unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up, but I'd just like to ask one more thing, which is, so before we go, can you tell our listeners what's one thing that they can do or the one most important thing you've learned about staying healthy in a 24/7 environment?
It's interesting. I would say really making a commitment to a shift work lifestyle. And by that, I mean that the people who succeed and seem to do the best with the shift work are the people who understand, all right, there are times when, yeah, I might want to stay up and watch the end of this movie or watch this show or game, but man, I got to get up early the next morning for my day shift, and so that they'll go to bed. The people who on night shift say, you know, yeah, it's tempting to, you know, get a big bag of M&Ms before I go on shift, but sort of say, all right, what are foods that would be best for me for my energy level and to help my stomach and prevent heartburn, and they make that commitment. And just like, you know, with light, people who make the commitment saying, all right, when I'm getting ready for bed, I'm going to start dimming down the lights. I'm going to try to minimize my exposure to blue light. when I wake up and when I want to boost my energy level during the daytime, I should, you know, try to expose myself to blue light. A lot of 24/7 control rooms, dispatch centers, there's a tendency I see a lot to dim the lights way down. The problem with that is, A, you're still getting a lot of blue light exposure. Even dim levels of blue light can disrupt your circadian rhythms. And B, you're also negatively influencing your alertness and reaction time. Mm. What we found is that by putting our lights into a 24/7 mission critical environment, like a dispatch center, and raising the lighting levels, is that people, their mood improves, they feel more alert. We've seen people taking less over-the-counter pain medication over the course of a year, that they feel better, so they're less likely to reach into their medicine cabinet and take Tylenol and ibuprofen. But kind of making the commitment and realizing, yeah, there are times where it might be a little bit inconvenient, but really taking the steps to ensure that they are best managing their shift work lifestyle and making that commitment.
Well, this has been incredibly interesting. Thank you so much for being on with us, and we look forward to hearing from you again.
Great. Thank you so much, Isabel. And my pleasure, and this is great.
Thanks for listening to Dispatch In Depth. Remember, it really helps us if you rate and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts. Dispatch In Depth is hosted by me, Isabel Gardett. Our producer is Becca Barris. Reading Roberts is the technical director, and Scott Robinson is our executive producer.